All right, hello. Welcome to the Showrunner Training Series presented by the Animation Guild's Writers Craft Committee. I'm Josh Brown, a volunteer with the Guild, and I'm joined today by Swinton Scott. Swinton has worked as a board artist, a director, producer, timing director on shows like The Simpsons, Camp Lazlo, Futurama, Muppet Babies, Phineas and Ferb, Angry Beavers, Paradise PD, Scooby-Doo, Harley Quinn, Avengers, Batman, G.I. Joe, and the list truly goes on. Swinton, thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with an introduction. Folks watching may want to know, how did you get your start in animation and how did you make your way up to your current position?
Well, my first job was as an assistant animator in-betweener at a small studio in North Hollywood called Pantomime Pictures. They used to do TV commercials, and also at the time I got in, they were doing Sesame Street. So they had a package of 18 Sesame Street episodes to do. So that was my first job, was in-betweening on Sesame Street.
Very nice, very nice. And how did you eventually make your way to being a timing director?
Well, I think a few months into it, the guy next to me, Mike Lyman, really great, wonderful guy, I asked him, "What do you guys do when Sesame Street stuff is over?" And he says, "Well, we do work for Hanna-Barbera, freelance." And so he took me down to the freelance guys handing out the work. I got some work on that. So I got to see Saturday morning production. And I got to actually see the difference between Sesame Street and Saturday morning stuff. And it started my interest in what are all the steps to make all these shows? What do these exposure sheets do? How do they work? And I saw how they were done in Saturday morning, and I saw how they were done in Sesame Street. So after so many years of being an assistant animator and animator, I had to learn how to do exposure sheets on The Simpsons. And I was a layout artist animator on that show. And at some points, we had to actually make out X sheets ourselves. And when I became an assistant director, I was doing tons of exposure sheets and learning the craft of timing. So that's where I got my big break. Timing was on The Simpsons, first and second season.
Nice, nice. And for folks who may not know, maybe they're coming from live action, maybe they've been writers their whole career and don't have a sense of the production pipeline. Can you talk a little bit more about what goes into the actual timing direction process?
So when you're a timing director, you are handed a storyboard and an animatic, a QuickTime animatic these days. It used to be videotape. And you watch the entire show. You watch your section you're going to work on. You look at the storyboard and you get a sense of what kind of timing the scene cutting is going to be and the characters moving is going to be by looking at the animatic. You then take the exposure sheet, which has broken down on it scene cuts, or else you do the scene cuts. And then you start timing everything in a shot that moves. The timing director has to account for it and tell when that object or character starts to move and when it stops moving. And that's basically what timing is. When does everything start and stop? How fast do they move? How slowly do they move? What's the rhythm that they do if they're dancing? What beats are they hitting when they do their dance? Everything is done by the timing director. The lip assign for the character speaking, that's all in a code that we use on the exposure sheet. We break that down and tell the animators exactly what mouth shape to use for every sound the character makes when they speak. So,
Okay, great. So what does your typical sort of day-to-day look like as you're going through that process?
well, let's see. Here is some stuff that I've saved over the years. This is a storyboard for a special done at Warner Brothers called Kangaroo Jack a few years ago. And here on this page, you can see there's Jack. Here's a couple of characters. Underneath, this is called a board slug, where the director above me, or sometimes myself, would actually write in all the action that's going to take place in that panel. This is called board slug because you are putting in time that's not covered by dialogue. So here we're adding in a 4-frame pause between the two lines of dialogue. This is the slug. All of this other writing is telling the animators and the timing sheet director how much time is going to be given to that dialogue, or if the character is going to do a certain movement, in this case, his head up and down to nod yes and no. So I take that information and I transpose that to an exposure sheet. These are small copies of the X sheet for Kangaroo Jack. These have been reduced down to 8.5 by 14 for shipping purposes.
Wow.
And on these sheets, you see that I've written down all the action that the character has to do. Each line represents one frame of film or video. Everything is accounted for on the sheet. Our job as the timing director is we're the last creative animation people to see the show and the drawings before they get sent overseas. So on this sheet, I've written hookup, which tells the animator that a character in this scene is going to be in this scene. So his pose needs to match. The last pose he does here needs to match up to the first pose that he's going to have in the next scene. Everything is written down on these sheets. You tell which characters are in the shot. I've got a direction here for the sweat dripping down on a character. And I've made this line, which means that sweat drips down through this entire time, which in this case is, this is 1 second and 2/3. Every 24 frames in film is 1 second on screen. So from here to here is 24 frames. And that's 1 second of film going by. The actual exposure sheet looks like this. It's 11 by 17. And this is more comfortable for us to write on, of course.
Yeah.
And every line, like I said, is one frame of film going down. We have a column for the dialogue, which will be written down, broken down by syllables by a track reader. And they actually make that word phonetically in this column. The next column over says exposure. And that's where we write our code for what mouth shape will be there.
So you're breaking this, the actual movement, everything down like to a single frame, right? You're accounting for every single frame. How much do you interact with the showrunners during a process like this? How much are they, knee deep in these decisions that are truly like frame by frame decisions?
Usually not much. They may walk by and have a little conference with us and the director of the episode and tell us both, here's the feeling I'm going for in the sequence. Can you guys make sure that the characters move in this type of motion at this speed or slow it down? And they may tell us other things like, can you add a little touch of the character's head moving a certain way when he speaks? Can you make this character walk a little bit faster or a little bit slower than what we have already decided on? We need a faster walk because he is feeling a certain way, like he's being chased. So just make him walk a little bit faster. We account for that walk on our sheets. And we're the ones that tell the animators what to do overseas to make that come back the way they want it in color.
Right. So it sounds like it comes down a lot to, seeing things after they've been boarded, after they've been directed, and really trying to fine tune all these expressions, these movements, and really try to find the pacing of the episode.
Right. So the actual pacing from scene to scene, that's been done by the director and the editor. The showrunner will look at that animatic and say, speed that up, slow that down. The editor will take that information and speed it up or slow it down. But that's just the scene cuts and the panel artwork. But for actually doing the animation, we deal with the animators overseas, and we have a special language of writing to tell them what to do and when to do it. And the stuff's been handed down for years and years. We're kind of like alchemists at this point.
Sure.
So we get this stuff, and the next time people see it, it's in color. And there's all these other steps in between, and we're part of that process of turning that into the color footage.
Okay. And so when everything's going well, when you have a healthy, good relationship with a showrunner, what does that relationship look like?
The last show I was on with the showrunner, Paradise, I don't think I dealt with the showrunners at all because they're so busy writing scripts and dealing with actors and so many other things. When I was at Disney TV on 7D, Tom Ruger was right there. So he would once in a while walk around and talk to me and Joanna. We were the timing directors on the show, and tell us, hey, make sure, I know we did this in the animatic this way, but could you guys change it so it's a little bit faster? It looks slow in the animatic. Can you guys make it faster and just cut some of the footage down, make the characters move a little faster and do things a little bit differently than what we already sent you? That's mostly what they'll tell us. They'll tell us also things like, can you make sure the lip sync is a bit snappier than what we're getting back? Sometimes what they get back in color, the mouth movements are a little bit mushy, too slow, and they'd rather have it popping a little bit faster. It adds to the cartooniness of the show sometimes if you do that. Makes it a little bit funnier. Instead of this real slow type of lip flap like this, it's, hey, what are you guys doing? And it's a lot better for audiences to see that. A lot of it is just, if the showrunner knows animation, it's, can you make this a bit more Disney-like? Can you slow it down so it's a bit more smooth action? And other guys will say, well, can you speed this up so it's more Tex Avery, Bob Clampett, Chuck Jones, like Warner Brothers cartoons from the 40s and 50s. So a lot of the showrunner language to deal with us needs to be in terms of acting, speed, and cutting, making sure characters are hooking up from one scene to the next. Oh, it helps if the showrunner knows some animation. If they know what kind of show they like already, and they can tell us, I'd like my show to kind of move the way that show moves, then we have something to hang it on. And we can say, oh, I know how to time like that show that you like.
I see. So we were talking before we started recording about you working on both Scooby-Doo and Paradise PD at the same time. I have to imagine those are some very different sensibilities, very different sets of the timing, the lip flap, all that sort of thing.
Extremely. Paradise PD, primetime animation in general, usually is very staccato with characters just standing and talking. And I guess the epitome of it would be South Park, where the guys just stand and just their mouths move and their eye blinks and that's about it. And the hand-drawn stuff, it's just literally people standing and talking, and then suddenly somebody will say something and a guy will trigger an action, and then there's tons of movement. And on Paradise PD, I was an animation timing director on that. And I was actually animating on the computer software Harmony. So that was a lot different doing that than it was Scooby-Doo. Scooby-Doo timing, we did more Disney Warner Brothers type timing on Scooby-Doo so that characters had a lot more smoothness to their action. There was a lot of subtleties, as in character moves from here to here. Well, in prime time, he would just do this. But in a Scooby-Doo or Warner Brothers or Disney show, they would do an antic this way and then move over here and stop, pick something up, and then maybe bring it back fast. But the movement is a lot more stylized. Whereas in prime time, a lot of it is just more direct, to the point. You don't, in prime time, usually do a big antic here and then move over here to grab something. Whereas in Warner Brothers, Disney stuff, you always antic. You always move opposite and then go over here and pick something up and bring it back. And it's, the movement is usually in circular motions like this. And it comes to a settle and stops and it keeps moving a little bit. Prime time, we just go here, get it, bring it back. That's it.
So how much do factors like either budget or the particular studio you're working with affect, you know, the timing and the what you're capable of animating?
I worked on a show years ago as a timing director, and the footage rate was so low that all I could really do to make any money was cut the sheets, which means indicate the scene cuts, put in the character names, and as little animation as I could get away with in a shot is what they got.
Sure.
And it turned out that's what the producers wanted. They did not want a lot of overacting. They didn't want a lot of fancy movement or anything. They just wanted direct acting, direct action. And if the character was going to walk, he just walks. plain and simple. It was the plainest animation you could do because that's all they could afford.
Yeah.
Now, if the guys are paying you a lot more to do the sheets, they're usually expecting you to do a lot more acting. Whatever the characters are doing in the storyboard, they want the timing director to please add more acting to it. So we'll add even more little touches to the guy when he picks up the cup like this, and he may put his pinky up, and we'll indicate that on the sheets. Whereas in prime time, they would just say, just pick the cup up and have done with it.
Yeah.
So how much money you have to spend will get a lot more work out of everybody down the line, really.
And it sounds like that's a good factor for a showrunner to be aware of, how much, you know, they can expect and how much is a reality, you know, based on their budget.
Yeah, yeah.
On the flip side of positive experiences, what are things that maybe cause you headaches or, you know, things, without being too specific on the particular show, what are ways in which your job becomes more difficult because of the communication with the showrunner?
I guess the worst is if you get the animatic, you get the sheets, and you're cutting your scene lengths based on the animatic scene cuts, and you're putting all these red lines on the sheets, and then suddenly a day later, you're into the timing. A day later, they say, oh, we have another cut of that animatic. All of your scene cuts are now wrong. You have to go back, basically erase everything you've just done, and redo it because the showrunner had a better idea. I changed my mind. Let's change the dialogue. So now the sheets have to be reread. Let's change all the scene cuts and let's redraw it. So now all that work you just did, we have to redo all over again. That's about the worst that can happen. Sometimes it's, well, we changed the dialogue in that one shot, but because the guy speaks longer now, the sheets are longer for that scene. So now we have to add pages within our bunch of pages we've already done. Now you've got A, B, and C pages instead of straight ahead numbering pages. Adding footage always throws something off somewhere. So the more final the board is when we get it, the better off everybody is.
Yeah. Are there firm deadlines on shows where this doesn't happen, where something is no longer allowed to be a work in progress? Something has gone to you and you can know that this is the final version. I can start timing it without thinking my work might be for nothing a day from now. Is on a show going well, do they have these firm deadlines for you?
Usually the lower the budget, the firmer the deadline.
Right.
So if you have a budget on a show that's really high, usually people keep tinkering with it and keep it as a work in progress all the way to the shipping day. So it's more efficient working with a low budget just because you get it out and you know that people above you have made all the decisions and they're fine with those decisions. The bigger the budget, the more sometimes guys go, oh, maybe I should change that up again. And the showrunner and the producers and writers, yeah, let's rewrite that. And let's call back all the work, rewrite everything, and we'll do it all over again. You know, that's fine from a creative standpoint, but then everybody down the line now has to change everything they've done. So yeah, the more final you can be and be really confident about your decisions, the better off everybody is.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like it's a real domino effect. You may want to change one thing, but to you, that's, you know, the last 48 hours of your work, right?
Or sometimes 48 days of your work, depending on how long the project is.
Wow. So is there any general advice that you would have for someone who's maybe a first-time showrunner or someone coming right over from live action who has no idea about showrunning an animated series?
My advice would be to learn all about how animation is done, how it's made. Look into a little bit of the history of animation, and you can find these old Disney and other studios have made these little short documentaries about here's how we make animation. Now, a lot of it's outdated because they're using paper and they're using painted cells and all that, but the general ideas are still the ones that we use. So if you know a bit about the process, it'll make your life and all of everyone else's lives easier further down the line. As far as dealing with the timing directors and the artists, storyboard guys, we're only people. We can't work 24 hours a day. And sometimes a guy will say, yeah, we have to change all that. And someone in production will say, well, the deadline is like tomorrow. And if the showrunner does not bend and say, we'll push the deadline back, somebody's going to have to work overnight to get all that done.
Yeah.
So be flexible and learn what you can and can't change as the show goes on and how much time you have. Be realistic about it. Don't expect people to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We can't do that. We're only human. We don't ask anybody else to do it. Don't expect the artist to be like that. So we have lives too.
Yeah. Yeah. And what may seem like a small change, it sounds like, you know, let's change this line. And that can mean a ripple effect of days and days of work for you, which some live action showrunners might not be aware of, right?
Right. And sometimes for us, it's that, oh, this character used to be a short character, but the showrunner decided to make him a tall character. What does that mean? That means all the models have to be changed for that character. All of his animation has to be changed throughout the show. So you have to call back all the X sheets and go through every scene and say, well, now he's taller. How does he move now that he's taller? His walk, when he walks across the screen, instead of being 12 frames per step, is now going to be 16 because he has longer legs. So everything will change because of this one idea somebody had to say, yeah, let's make it a tall guy instead.
Yeah, well, because everything changes down to the lip flap, the speed of the movement. It's an easy change to say, but a very difficult change to implement, right?
Right. So a lot of writers will get into this thing of they'll write a scene and the last line for the description is just, and then a fight ensues. Well, how does that fight ensue? Where, whose point of view is it from? Who is the person telling the story that said the fight ensued and we got caught in the, is it someone from the middle looking at the fight or is it someone back here looking down on the fight? Keep in mind, you have to describe these things for the artist to draw and for us to time so that you get back what you want. The more specific you can be, the better off everybody's job will be, the easier our jobs will be.
Yeah, it sounds like being specific and knowing what you want, right, really helps things along the way, not changing things late in the process, especially.
And don't expect people down the line to read your mind as to what you want.
Yeah.
There's a lot of scripts that come by and you'll go, what does that mean? And you have to go to the writer and say, can you tell me exactly what it is you're looking for here? Because this line that you wrote is not really describing it. It's just an offhanded throwaway thought you had. Give me some details as to what this is supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, right, there's a fine line there. If you don't want to over-direct, you know, especially the actor, you know, in the dialogue and things like that, but you do want to make it absolutely clear what is expected.
Set the scene and tell us, where is it? Who is it happening to? Whose POV is it from? Give us some details so that we're not flying blind. The worst thing to do is to have your board guys turn in this work and you look at it and say, well, that's not at all what I had in mind. And you show them the script. This is all you wrote. So what did you expect? This is open to interpretation. If you don't want my interpretation, write exactly what it is you're looking for. And we'll find a compromise and give you what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that, Swinton, is all I've got for you. I'd like to open it up to you to plug many of the shows that you're working on or any other places we could find you on social media. Is there any info you'd like folks watching this to know?
Let's see. Last year, I ended up on Paradise PD. At this time last year, matter of fact, I was winding up that show. And the episodes that I did already ran, they ran like 8 of them, I think, and the next 12 start running, I think this coming weekend or the weekend after. At some point here in March, they're starting the last batch of season 2. Other shows I've been on, like you said, The Simpsons and Futurama and all that, that's all over the place. You can always find an episode somewhere. I am on Instagram under my name, Swinton Scott. And what else? I do have a YouTube channel where I teach pieces of animation, such as how to animate, how to draw, how to design characters, again, under just my name. So if you look me up, you can find my channel there somewhere. And there's various interviews with me on YouTube. I think there's a couple interviews with me on YouTube as well.
Yeah, which all sounds like it could be good background for a potential showrunner, right?
I hope so. I hope so. One of the things I really loved in my job at Hasbro about 11 years ago now, I was on Pound Puppies as a storyboard revisionist. And one of my favorite parts of that job was to sit with the producer and two other storyboard artists. And the producer would say, well, the script said this, and he was the showrunner, but I'd like it so that it was storyboarded slightly differently. And I would sit there with tracing paper and just draw it out for him right there and show it to him. And he could say, that's the angles I'm looking for. Yes. Let's do it that way.
Yeah.
Working with someone like that, a very personal way to work, is a very satisfying thing for a lot of us. It's just getting that feedback right away. This is what you're looking for. Great. I'm drawing it out and show it to them and say, here, how about this? That's it. That's gold. Let's go with that. That's very satisfying. Instead of, here's your script. You come back in a month. Okay, here's my storyboard. And then you leave. And everybody looks at your boards and says, well, yeah, I guess it's all right. And then as they start going along, the producer showrunner says, well, that's not exactly what I had in mind. Somebody's got to change all that.
Yeah, and I think this is a theme in these interviews that we've been doing, that it's a collaborative medium, right? And you want to collaborate, communicate as much as possible throughout the process instead of just giving maybe negative feedback late in the game.
Right, right. Look at the work as it's handed in. Tell us what you want. Tell us what you need. And then we can work together to make your vision come alive on screen. So the more you tell us, the better off everyone is.
I think that's a perfect note to end on. I'm letting folks know that this video will be available as part of the Showrunner Training Series. Swinton, thank you so much for your time. It's been great speaking with you.
It's been good talking to you too. I hope we can do it again sometime.
Yeah, sounds great.